we're holding on Pedalad Amud Bey's five lines from the bottom. We learned yesterday Machlokas Rav Yochanan and Mishlokish, where Rav Yochanan also had Ula on his side, as far as Bikurim, you have to bring the best quality fruit for Bikurim. For example, as far as dates, they have to grow in valleys rather than on the mountains. And if so, what happens if you bring ones, for example, dates that grow on the mountains? Or another thing we said was grain that grew in valleys. So Ula and Rav Yochanan had said that the Chalal doesn't have the Kedusha of Bikurim. Rish Lakish had said you shouldn't bring on the Hatchila, but B'diyevet, if you did, then it's still fine Bikurim. So the Gemara says Tony Choda. Now we have one Braisa where we have two Braisas that seem to contradict one another, and we'll see how Rish Lakish and how Rav Yochanan would explain it. So Tony Choda, we learned yesterday we had cases where produce grows on a roof or in a boat, or we had several cases like that. So now, one Braisa says, Shabagag, if produce grows on a roof, Shabachorva, or in a ruined building, Shabaotzitz, or in a flower pot, Shabasfino, or in a boat, maybe the Koda, then you can not only bring the Koda from those, you can even say the Psukim. Now the Psukim say that I'm bringing the Pasuk says that you have to bring the Kodim Mei Aretzachah, as we learned yesterday, you have to bring from your land. So these places are still considered part of your land, and therefore you can not only bring the Kodim, but you can even say the Psukim and say that I'm giving you the produce of the land, Hashem Asaf of the Hashem, the land that you Hashem gave me, because these are considered part of the land. But Tani Idach, maybe they ain't a Kodim. Whereas the second Braisa says you can bring the Kodim from there, but you can't say the Psukim, because it's not part of Mei Aretzachah. So how do we reconcile the two braises? Bishlemel Rish Lakish. Now, according to Rish Lakish, it's not so hard to understand. Gag agag lakasha. There's no contradiction between the two cases of the roof. Ha, the gag de ma'ara, ha, the gag de bias. Because it depends. One's talking about a roof of a cave. So if you have a cave in the ground and it has a roof over it, well, that roof is part of the natural ground. It happens to have a hollow under it, but big deal. So therefore, it's certainly considered me'aretzacha, and you can certainly bring recording from it and even say the psukim. Oh, but gag the bias, where's the braisa that says that you can't say the psukim? We'd be talking about where it grew on the roof of a house. So Rashi Ksaviad says because it wouldn't be considered part of the ground. The Rosh argues and says that no, it would be considered part of the ground, but it's not so meshuvach. As we learned before, we said that the produce has to be as meshuvach, has to be as good quality as possible, and here you don't have. So fine. So according to Rish Lakish, it's easy to understand that. Churva, churva like kasha. Similarly, there's no contradiction between the two braises as far as the ruined building, because you can say kan b'churva avoda, kan b'churva she'en avoda, because it depends whether the ruin has been worked or not. Did you actually plow and plant the place deliberately, or did the produce happen to grow over there? So if you actually worked on it, so fine. It happens to be a ruined building. Big deal. But if you didn't work on it at all, then we would say that you can't consider it part of the karka, and or it's not good quality or whatever, and therefore you can't say the psukim. Also, otzitz like kasha, then there would be no contradiction as far as the two statements, as far as the flower pot, kan ba'otzitz knuckle, kan ba'otzitz chain and knuckle, because the two possibilities would be talking about whether the flower pot has a hole. In halacha, we have all over shas where a flower pot with a hole is basically considered to be part of the ground, because the plant is able to get nourishment through the hole, is able to get nourishment directly from the ground. So therefore, so one braisa that says that you can say the psukim would be talking about where the flower pot has a hole, and the other one would be talking about where you can't say the psukim, the flower pot doesn't have a hole, and therefore, even if you bring the korim from it, maybe only did a bun on whatever, but nevertheless, you wouldn't say the psukim because not me'aretzacha. And the fourth case, Sfina Lakasha, and as far as the two cases, as far as the boat, there would also, according to Rish Lakish, be no question. Because canvas finish, it's canvas finish or cheres. Because it depends whether we're talking about a wooden boat or an earthenware boat. So regular Rashi explains that an earthenware boat, regular Rashi and Rashi Ksaviad explain that an earthenware boat is considered part of the ground. because cheres, either because the earthenware itself is made from the earth, or because the plant is able to easily get nourishment through it because it's porous. As opposed to if it grew in a wooden boat, then you wouldn't be able to bring the psukim. Then you wouldn't be able to say the psukim because it's not considered to have grown in your land. Now Tosfos has a long discussion about that. First of all, Tosfos says, why don't the Gemara say that both of them are talking about a wooden boat, but one is where it has a hole and the other doesn't? So Tosfos points out because you don't make holes in boats. The whole point is you don't want the water to get in, so therefore you're not going to have it's true that if it had a hole, then it would have the same din, but realistically you're not going to have a hole in a boat. But besides that, anyway, Tosfos goes on to discuss the problem with it is that in all the other cases, we said, in each of the other three cases, we said, for example, Gad Gemara versus Gad Gemayis, so the roof of a cave, you would say the psukim, the roof of a house, you would not. The churva, when the churva was worked and plowed and planted, then you would say the psukim. When it wasn't, then you wouldn't. Here, all of a sudden, according to Rashi and Rashi Ksavyad, we have the other way around. We're saying that if it's a wooden boat, you wouldn't say the psukim. And if it was an earthenware boat, you would. So it's backwards compared to the other ones.
And why wouldn't the roof, if you work on the roof of your place?
Because the roof of your house, either it's not considered part of the ground, or that's according to Rashi, or according to the Rosh, sure, it's considered part of the ground, it's attached to the ground, but it's not muvchar, it's not good quality. Yeah. Anyway, so Tosfos, because of that, and because of a number of other places in Shas, explains the other way around. That on the contrary, what the Gemara means is, if it's in an earthenware boat, you would not say the psukim. If it was in a wooden boat, you would say the psukim because then it's able to get nourishment from the ground through that, because the wood is porous enough, as opposed to cheres is harder, and therefore it's not going to get nourishment, and therefore it's not considered man.
I'm assuming it's a boat that's in one place, stationary.
Well, no, it could be the boat is moving as well.
It gets nourishment while it's moving? Okay.
Yeah, maybe. In any case, fine. So therefore, according to the Shlokas, there's no contradiction between the braises. Now, the Keren Oda does point out that there is still one remaining contradiction, because even Rish Lakish wasn't saying lechatzchila you can bring from such payrus. He was saying, but yeah, if you bought some from such payrus, then you can say that then fine, it's valid recording. Here the Braisa seems to be saying, maybe the Kore, the first Braisa seems to be saying, not only you can bring them, but you can actually say the psukim. So the Karen Ora explains the difference is Rish Lakish would say, in the case of dates, for example, you have dates that grew on a mountain, you also happen to have dates that grow in a valley. Don't bring from the ones on the mountain, they're poor quality. Bring from the ones in the valley. But if you have nothing else, the only date palms you have are on a mountain, doesn't the hate bring from them? So that would fit well with the Spreisa, that there's a case where even maybe the credit. Anyway, the question is Elul Rabbi Yochanan Kasha. This was a question on Rabbi Yochanan, because according to Rabbi Yochanan and Ula, we said that if you bring sub-quality fruit, then you can't even, you don't even have the Kedusha of Bikurim, so forgetting about saying the Psukim, you can't even bring them in the first place. So how is the Braisa saying that the you're able to bring them? Rashi Ksavyad explains that the question is that apparently though the Braisa seems to be saying you do have to bring, if you have payrus that grew on a roof or in a ruin or in a boat or whatever, then you still have to bring them. Whereas according to Rabbi Yochanan, what's the point of bringing them at all if they don't have kedusha at all? And again, according to Rashi, according to regular Rashi, the question is slightly different, that Rabbi Yochanan is saying they don't have Kedusha at all, but he was saying that both Braises seem to be agreeing they have a Kedusha of the Kodim. The question is whether you said Psukim or not. The Rosh also in his Truva also explains Lushitase that the question is that we're saying again that you do bring Bikurim from these places, whereas according to Rabbi Yochanan, you don't bring from them at all. So fine, when it grows on a gag or a churba, then fine, you could say at least they're better quality than for example, the dates that grow on a mountain. Those are really bad quality. But fine, the question still is that when it comes to the flower pot or the boat, then we're saying that you still bring the korim from them, whereas according to the Yerich, then there would be no point. So the Gemara answers Tanoim. It's actually a machlokas Tanoim, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan can follow one of those Tanoim, the Tanya, because we learn another Braisa. Should the gag, should the churva, maybe the korei? Another Braisa says that peiros that grow on a roof or in a room, you could bring the korban from them and you could even say the psukim, because after all, it is on the ground. So fine, in the case of a roof, we could say, like we said before, that it means the roof of a cave, in which case it's actually part of the ground that just happens to have a hollow underneath it. Or we could say maybe even it's a roof of a house and say that the tana of this braisa holds, since it is attached to the ground, that it's considered part of the ground.
The rain is water sustaining.
Yeah. The shabachorvo, the same thing in a room, you said it could mean, for example,
you worked on it?
That you worked it, yeah. So maybe the curry, you could bring the curry and you could even say the psukim. But when it's in a flower pot or in a boat, and it may be called ikur, then you don't bring that at all, the curry from them. So even if the flower pot has a hole, even if the flower pot has a hole, and even if the boat is wood or cheres, according to the other thing, because in other words, because it's poor quality.
Could be good quality.
But apparently they were understanding that, no, it's not going to be such good quality, because just because it gets a little bit of nourishment through the hole, it's still not going to develop as well as it would in the ground. We're going to learn now in the next Mishnah, we're going to learn how they would try to make sure the wheat and the barley for the carbonus is the top quality, that they would do it in the best possible fields. So now you're doing a flower pot, it's not going to be so good. So therefore, so now those are equivalent to the dates that grow on the mountains, and therefore Rabbi Yochanan can indeed say that you can't bring Bikurim from them at all, and if you do, they don't have Kedushin. Tosfos points out, you still have the question, what about the Gag and the Churba? The fact is, the Braisa is saying that if they grow on a roof or in a Churba, then you could bring Bikurim from them, whereas Rabbi Yochanan had said that not. Some of Foshim talk about the Tzad Kodshim gives an answer that the real question was we learned yesterday that Rabbi Yochanan Darshins from Mei Artzacha, that there were certain kinds of peiros even from Shivas Aminim that you can't bring, and yet we see that all the Tanoim seem to be saying that you could. So now the Gemara is saying that there were certain kinds that you can't bring from a flower pot, you can't bring from a boat. Fine, then at least we have a Tana who holds that may out of her that you have a miut, like Rabbi Yochanan is saying. Fine, it's not exactly the same miut as Rabbi Yochanan said, but fine, it's still, the point is, somebody does hold of that miut, and therefore that's good enough for our purposes to not contradict him. The Mishnah said, "B'cholim enin barisalim and amuv chacholah." We said that all of the menachos, they have to come from the best quality. We said that the omer and the shtei alechem, according to most tanoim, have to come specifically from Eretz Yisrael. Although we said, according to Rabbi Yosi Rabbi Yehuda, they could come from Chutz La'aretz even. But we said that all of them have to come from the best quality. And then the Mishnah had gone on to describe that there are places which produce the best quality flour, and then the Mishnah had said the second best quality. So the Mishnah had said that the Mishnah had listed places we had the different gears of Nichmas and Zinucha give the best quality wheat, and then the second best we said was a place called Aferayim. So now the Gemara brings something regarding that place Aferayim. We know when Moshe came to do the Makkos, so we know that a few times the Egyptians, even before the Makkos, when Moshe was doing the signs in front of Paro, just throwing his stick on the ground and it turned into a snake, so we know that several times the Mitzvah duplicated it. The magicians over there duplicated and copied it. Two of their chief magicians were named Yochanan and Mamre. So the Gemara brings in this connection, Amula Yochanan and Mamre, the Moshe. These two top magicians, Yochanan and Mamre, called Moshe. The word Mamre, the Maharal points out, means somebody who rebels.
Yeah.
It means somebody who rebels, like Ben Sora Ramoda. So it's a very appropriate name for somebody who does Kishuf, which rebels against Hashem. Anyway, so they told him, Tevin at a Machnes for Ophraim. It's like you're bringing straw to Ophraim. So like in our Mishnah, we're saying Ophraim is a place where they produce a tremendous amount of grain. Yeah. So they also have lots of straw. So what are you bringing in? All your straw over here. In other words, you're coming to the world capital of Kishuf, to Mitzrayim, and you're bringing more Kishuf. What's the point of it? Because they thought that what he's doing is also Kishuf, after all. Amalahu, so Moshe answers them, Amri Inshi, you know, it's like people say, Lamasa Yarka, to a city where lots of vegetables grow, Yarka Shkil, bring your vegetables there to sell them, because people will be able to appreciate it over there. So meaning, in other words, like, I'm coming to a place where you guys do so much kishuf, you'll be able to appreciate more than anybody else what I'm doing. So regular Rashi says over here that they said to him, Litzonis, so he answered them kind of Litzonis as well. A bunch of Mepharshim do talk about it's more than just Litzonis. It's more than just Litzonis. First of all, he's telling them over here, Shittim Ukubetza says that, people come to a city to buy all the vegetables over here, so now everybody comes to see your Kishuf, but people will see that mine is better than yours. People are going to see, you guys can't do the real thing, I can do the real thing. So my vegetables are better than yours.
But he swallows his dirt.
My stick will swallow your snakes even after, yeah.
Alive,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. The Ram has in one of his Zerushas, where he talks about this whole matter of the Nisim of Yitzis Mitzrayim. So he says that in a similar vein, that in other words, when you have a place where there are average vegetables, and I bring better vegetables, so now, Fakert, you're going to be able to see that my things are not from Kishuf like yours, rather mine come from the Eidishter.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying the Yidden would travel all the way up down to Mitzrayim?
No, well, the Yidden were already in Mitzrayim. Well, so he's telling them, like, anybody who wants to see real Kishuf is going to come to Mitzrayim, but now, when they come, this is after the place to demonstrate that, no, the real thing is not your Kishuf, the real thing is what I'm doing in Hashem's name.
What about when they need the wheat? They said the second vision.
No. So no. Ephraim is not a place in Mitzrayim. Ephraim is a place in Eretz Yisrael.
Oh, okay.
But so that's one explanation. That's actually one interesting explanation, is that Ephraim was so fit. Why is the Gemara bringing this piece over here? Just because it mentions Ephraim. So one explanation is Ephraim was so famous for its wheat, even though it was that even the people in Mitzrayim were so familiar with it, that Yochanan and Mamre are using it as an example of a place that has lots of wheat and lots of straw. So we see how famous it was for that, and even then the Mishnah is saying that's only the second best place for wheat. Okay. Mishnah says, Amavian, we do not bring. Now, what we don't bring, we'll see in a second. Loimibes has zvolim, not from a field that had to be fertilized. First of all, because Rashi Ksavian says it may have not been fertilized completely. And then it's going to come out some parts of it. The wheat is not going to be such good quality. Another explanation, Rashi Ksavyad says, is within the fertilizer itself. It's smelly stuff, so it gives an off odor to the grain that grows there. The Rambam has yet another explanation. The Rambam explains that Beis HaZvolim would mean poshut wheat that grows in a garbage heap. So you can't bring from that. V'loim Beis HaSholchim, and also not from an irrigated field, a field that's where, which is dry and needs to be irrigated artificially, because again, the not such good quality grows over there. V'loim Beis HaElon, or from a place where trees grow. So regular Rashi says the reason is because regular Rashi says actually the reason is because the trees shade it, so therefore it doesn't get such good sunlight. Rashi Ksavyad says is that the trees take nourishment from the ground, right? But if he did bring from such places, then it's kosher. Now what are we talking about? Rashi Ksavyad says we're talking about here specifically the Omer and the Shtei Alechem. So in other words, the wheat for other menachas, we don't have these restrictions in the first place, according to him. Tosfos discusses and says that no, it means all the, Tosfos says it means all the menachas. And Tosfos brings proofs from the continuation of the Mishnah, that in fact these rules that we're saying over here apply to all the menachas. All of them, when you're bringing wheat for the menachas, it shouldn't be from such fields, but the evidence kosher.
But then we learn other places that you could bring, even from Nachas, unless that's private carbonus, you could bring it from anywhere, even Chutzlars?
We said you can bring wheat from Chutzlars, but we're saying even from Chutzlars, it has to be from a naturally irrigated field and not from one that was fertilized.
A regular person also private carbonus.
So a regular person, private carbonus. So again, according to Rashi, no. It's enough that by the Omer and the Shtei Alechem, you have to bring from this quality, for other Menachas Lachtchili. You could even bring from fields that are not this good, but according to Tosfos, we're talking about all menachas. I think that Amram also agrees with Tosfos on that. Yeah, because the Rambam, in fact, brings these halachas in Hilchos Yisurim Mizbeach, which is where he talks about generally about the Karbonos, and not in Hilchos Tzmidin and Mosafim, where he talks about specifically the Omer and the Shtei Alechem. Okay. So how do you do it in order to get the best quality grain? Not a Shana Dishona. The first thing is you plow the field the first year. And the purpose of that plowing is not yet to plant. The purpose of that plowing is to get rid of the weeds and things that would grow there. This way you don't have anything taking nourishment from the soil. Then in the second year, then you plant the grain 70 days before Pesach, because that way it'll be developed by the time Pesach comes. We're going to see in the Gemara whether it means how many times, does it mean you plow a second time now before you plant, or what we'll see in the Gemara exactly what's going on with that. Tosfos brings, by the way, this is one of the proofs that Tosfos says, we're not just talking about the Omer, for example. Tosfos says that actually this may be, Tosfos asks that wheat should have to be planted much earlier. Wheat, you have to plant Cheshvan, Kislev time, Tavis, the latest, certainly not the 70 days before Pesach would be early Shvat.
That's for sure.
That's as far as wheat, but barley takes much less time to grow, therefore you can plant it in Shvat, and therefore we're fine. No, but we're talking about over here before Pesach, that you want to, you're planting it 70 days before Pesach, so that's Tosfos is objecting, that if it was wheat, then it wouldn't have enough time to grow. Fine, you're going to be using it for the Shea Lechem on Shavuos, but you're also going to be using it for, that might be an answer, that if the wheat, you only need Shavuos time, so therefore from Shabbat until Shavuos. But Tosfos's real question is that a Gemara in Bava Metzia that talks about the various agricultural seasons, says you have different opinions over there, what's the latest time of planting? But the very latest that you have, according to any opinion over there, is Tavis time. So you don't really have anybody who says that you should plant wheat as late as Shvat. So therefore, so the answer is we might be talking about only as far as barley over here. And now it produces a lot of solus, a lot of fine flour. Ketzad bodek ha-gizbo. Now, once you ground the flour, how does the gizbo check to see whether it's clean flour that doesn't have any of the other, that doesn't have any of the powder or anything in it? And here also Tosfos points out, if it's talking about the Omer only, then the expression should be shluche beistin, like we had earlier in the Masechta. Gizbo suggests that we're talking about Olmanot.
Oh.
We're talking about the gizbo, I mean the treasurer of the Besmekdash, who's in charge of, people would go and buy the, usually people wouldn't necessarily bring their own flour from another. The flour has to be prepared on a very high standard, Altaras HaKodesh, and the average person is not necessarily capable of doing that. So usually you would buy from the gizbarim in the Besmekdash. In fact, the Mishnayos and Shkolim describe a whole system. Usually when a person, in particular for Minchas Nisachim, a person brings an animal korban, he has to bring Nisachim along with it, as we've been learning throughout the Masechta. The Gemara, the Mishnah and Shkolim describes a whole system where they have one office in the Beis Mikdash where you pay for the Nisachim and get a voucher, which then you take to another office in the Beis Mikdash and collect your Nisachim, which would have been prepared in or near the Beis Mikdash, Altaras HaKodesh. So now the Gizbar, for example, is buying flour from a vendor, from a supplier. He needs to make sure that it's good stuff. So how did he check?
Talking about Chitim, that's Tzorim.
So that's the point. Are we talking about Chitim or are we talking about Tzorim? So this is...
Yeah, Pesach, we did Tzorim, but the Omer.
By the Omer, they're doing Tzorim, but by other Menachas, that's the thing. Rashi is explaining that we're talking only... Rashi is explaining we're talking only about the Omer and the Shtei Alechem, this whole Mishnah. Tosfos is explaining we're talking about all Menachas. So throughout the year, they'd be buying wheat from Menachas.
But could bring when Menachas Chitim before the Omer?
No, you can't.
The Shtei Alechem?
No, well, you're not supposed to, but the other you did is fine. But
right, so what's why before Pesach? I mean?
So that's what I'm saying. We're planting them before Pesach. But that was what Ellie was saying a minute ago. That maybe Taka an answer would be that they're planting it in Shvat, and it has until Shavuos to grow the wheat. It's true, but on the other hand, though, as I said, Tosfos's question is not really so much that there's not enough time for it to grow. The question is based on Gemara and Bava Metzia that implies that any opinions that says that that you would plant wheat would be Tavis time. But then Tosfos says that barley actually could be planted as late as Adar and it'll still grow Nisan time. So Ketzad bodek ha-gizbo, so how does the gizbo check to make sure the flour is clean? Mach misyodel ha-sofan, he puts his hand into the flour, olav ha-ovak, and if flour dust comes up on his hand, pskula, then it's possible for the menachas, because then the flour dust is not the good stuff. This is what we have in Pirkei Avos. You have a nofa shemetzias asolus for keletas, shemetzias akemach for keletas asolus. You have a sieve where you put in there the mixture of solus, which is the bit coarser ground flour, and then you have the kemach, which is the flour dust, and you put it in there, and the dust falls through the holes, and the solus remains behind. And that's a metaphor for a Talmid Chacham who learns Torah, he forgets and doesn't bother with the unimportant things. Let's say the details of it. Let's say, for example, the details of a mashal that his Rebbe used to explain the point or whatever, but he remembers the actual, the main, the actual, the punchline, the material, yeah. Okay, so all of the avok, so if flour comes out on his hand, still, that's possible, adshina penna, until he sifts it. And another din, the imitlia, if the flour develops wounds in it, psula, then it's possible, and now you can't sift it, because now it's considered to have a mum.
So again, so the avok,
you just have to sift out. The avok, you just have to sift out. That's the finished stuff, right. So in other words, when we usually think of flour, you go buy a bag of flour in the store, it is powdery stuff. But no, we're saying over here, fakir, what had to be used for the menachas was the coarser grain stuff. You mill it, you don't grind it quite so finely to make flour dust, you grind it a little more coarsely to make solus. You can go in the store after Pesach, you can look and they have a quality of grain product called semolina. Like people use it to make like flourful like things and things like that. That's more or less the what we call solus over here. Okay. So the Gemara says, Ketzed Osa, how do we do it as far as plowing the field? Norashon and Ashon, and we said you plow at the first field, the first year, and then the second year, and then the second year you plant it. So the Gemara says, Ibarilahu, the Chama had a question, Heichi Kamar. What does the Tana mean? Nora Shonu Rishona. Does it mean that just he plows it the first year, Ushnia Nora, and then the second year he again plows it, Vizorda, and then he plants it later on? In other words, because in particular, Nora is not just plowing in order to plant. Nora is particular the kind of plowing that you do in order to kill any weeds that might be growing over there. So maybe you should say after a whole year, you have to plow it again to get rid of any weeds that might be growing there during the year in between. The reason why you leave it empty after the first year is because you want the soil to have its full strength so that it'll produce the best possible grain. But maybe the second year you do have to also do the nora in order to get rid of any weeds that might have taken root in between. Oduma shana rishona or shnia or oduma nora shana rishona. Maybe it just means you plow it the first year to remove the weeds or shnia zora bale nora, and the second year you plant without doing nora first. You do have to do some kind of You do have to do a plowing, and actually, Ksaviad points out, when you're actually about to plant, you have to turn over the soil to soften it so the seeds will take root, but maybe you don't need the second nora. So the Gemara says, Toshma, we can prove from the following blaise, Tanya, Amar Rabbi Yosi, after, here you're talking about, we talked about in the previous mission, of places from which you could bring wheat for menachas. Now, is it only those places? Amar Rabbi Yosi, Afkite Karzayim, or Kfar Achim, also the wheat of Karzayim, and of Kfar Achim, Irmolis, Smuchas, the Yerushalayim, If they were close to Yerushalayim, Hoyim Avin Mehen, they would bring from them grain. They would bring from them grain for the Omer. Now, there's a number of different explanations what we mean by Yomolei Smuchas Yerushalayim. So regular Rashi says it means, in other words, that they are close to Yerushalayim. The problem is, therefore, they're between the mountains, and the problem is that you need places that the wheat shouldn't be growing in the mountains. It should be growing on hillsides. So you don't really have close to Yerushalayim. You don't have places that are good like that. Rashi Ksaviad says the same thing, that the problem is that, in other words, so according to that first explanation, if they were close, they're just the opposite, if they were close to Yerushalayim, they would be in the mountainous area, and that would be good. Grain grows well on hillsides. The problem is they're not close enough to Yerushalayim, and therefore they're in a different kind of topography, and therefore they're in a place where the wheat doesn't grow so well. That's Rashi Ksaviad's first explanation. Rashi Ksaviad's second explanation is, if they were close to Yerushalayim, we're talking specifically about the Omer. If they were close to Yerushalayim, we would bring from them, but because Ein Ma'avirin Al HaMitzvos, we want to bring from the closest possible place to Yerushalayim, the Omer and the Shnei Lechem, and maybe other Menachas as well, therefore we can't bring from them, only because they're further away. Tosfos has another point about it, that in particular, Tosfos says Chite Karzayim may not mean wheat of Karzayim. It may mean there was an actual place called Chite Karzayim, and we're talking about the barley over here. We're talking about the barley could have come from there, were it not for the fact that it's geographically close or distant, or the different opinions over here, what we mean. There is, by the way, there was a place in the Galil near the Kinneret called Korazim. They have ruins over there that you can visit. They have ruins of a beautiful shul that was there like 2,000 years ago. So maybe that's the same as the Karzayim. Maybe that's the same as the Karzayim of Or Gemara, but maybe not.
It's interesting. Before the Gemara was saying where you should get from.
We said that wheat shouldn't be from the valleys. So wheat should be best.
They mentioned two cities.
We said two cities, but
again later on, but a second place, and those places are far away.
So no, they weren't so far away. That's the thing. They were relatively close. So Zitcha, Machnes, or Michmas is fairly close to Yerushalayim. I think nowadays it's even one of the suburbs of Yerushalayim, more or less. Okay. Zitcha or Zanoicha, I don't know where that is exactly, but it's also in Eretz Yehuda. Aphraim is maybe a little further away, but not so far. But yeah. Anyway, so sort of Yossi says they would have brought grain from them, whether we're talking about the Omer or whether we're talking about other Menachas as well. Because we bring the Omer only from the fields that are in the south. Now, Mudromos, one meaning of Mudromos can mean that are in the south of Eretz Yisrael, which therefore they get more sunlight. Tosfos brings another explanation that it means hillsides that face towards the south. Hillsides that have a southern exposure. So therefore they get more sunlight than ones that are facing in other directions. So in other words, according to Tosfos, it doesn't have to be Dapka in the south of Eretz Yisrael. It just has to be someplace which is face where the hillside faces towards the south. Anyway, so only from Shodas Hamadromas, Vamnu Noris, and they have to be plowed to get rid of the weeds. Lakach for that purpose. Shabahen Chamazerachas, so Vahen Chamashekas, that's where the sun rises and sets over there. So therefore, they're exposed to the sun all day, and therefore the sun helps ripen them and make them the best quality. And the Braisa says, and once we finish the Braisa, then we're going to see how we see that apparently we have the answer that you need to plow more than one time in order to plant this wheat. Ketero, he says, so what do? Not a shorter Yeshona. You plow it to get rid of the weeds the first time. Ushia Chodesh Vashona, the second time you plow again. So Chodesh Vashona means actually plowing twice. So that would be one to get rid of the weeds and one to soften the soil to plant. The Zohar, according to Pesach, Shivim Yom, and you plant the grain 70 days before Pesach, like we said in the Mishnah, Kadesh Yitei Smucha Lachama, that way it's close to the time when the sun is getting stronger. The fifth of Shvat is a little bit past the middle of the winter, so the sun, so the days are starting to get longer, so therefore the sun is starting to get more powerful. And when you do like that, when you follow all of this, you'll end up with grain where the stalk is only one zeres, is a half an am long, and the area with the kernels will be two zerasim. So in other words, it'll be very, very, very much longer and much wider. In a normal stalk of grain, you have a much longer stalk, and then you have a little bit, you have some grain on top. Here you have, you put in this, then you have much more grain than you have length and width of stalk.
And the longer it is, the more could be
that. The more grain you can get out of it.
Right. No, but if it's too long, it also can fall off.
Maybe, I guess there is that too, yeah. So the Braisa continues, so now you harvest it on Ma'amer and you bind it into sheaves, Vidosh, and you thresh it. This is one of Tosfos' proofs, by the way, that we're not talking about the barley for the Omer, because the barley we learned in an earlier Perek, you don't thresh it because you don't want to crush the kernels. Instead, you say you beat it softly with cabbage leaves and things like that in order to break off the shells. Here we're saying dosh, you do the normal kind of threshing. Oh. That would suggest more that we're talking about wheat from Menachos. Anyway, so vizoda and you winnow it, or bird and you pick out any rocks or dirt or whatever that's still in it, the toichen, and you grind it, or merakid, and you sift it. Now that you get that point, or maybe it's a gizbar, and now you bring the sifted flour to the gizbar, and he's going to do a final check, as we said in the Mishnah, the gizbar machnes yod v'soicha, the gizbar puts his hand into it, him also ba'avak, and if flour dust sticks to his hand, oimoloi, then he tells the vendor, chazor v'napa oisashnia, go sift it again, because we can't have any flour dust in here. Now, the Braisa continues, Mishum Rav Nosson Omru, they said in the name of Rav Nosson, a different way of checking it. Gizbar Soch Yodei V'Shemen, the Gizbar would first smear his hand with oil, or Machnes L'Soicha, and then stick his hand in, Ad Shemala Kol Avoka, until he brings up all the flour dust, because when his hand is wet with oil, then all the flour dust will stick to it much better. So therefore, he'll be sure to get out all the dust. It may be then that according to Rav Nosson, actually, you don't even need to tell the guy, go re-sift it. The gizbar can use his oily hand to get rid of all the flour dust, and then maybe, I don't know. In any case, Platoni Mias Chodesh V'Shemina. Now, the bottom line is, the Braisa is saying that you plow, and you plow again, implying, therefore, so there's the answer, that when the Mishnah had said, Not a Shana Rishona, you plow it to get rid of the weeds the first time. The second year, you also need to plow it to get rid of the weeds. And then later, a little later, you're going to plow it right before you plant in order to soften up the soil. So there's the answer. Kofanim yes chodesh v'shoneh. It says that you plow and plow again. But the Gemara says that's not a proof. According to your svara that you want to bring from the Braisa, the fact is masnisim lekatani shoneh. The Mishnah doesn't even say the word shoneh at all. So maybe the Mishnah and the Braisa disagree. Braisa katani shoneh, and the Braisa does say the word shoneh. So maybe in fact the Mishnah and the Braisa are arguing, and not necessarily can you learn the meaning of one from the other. So the answer is a whole like kasha. That's not such a question. They're not necessarily contradicting one another. Kan ba'avurda, kan b'she'en avurda. It depends. Has the field already been plowed previously, or has it not? If it hadn't been plowed before, after the last harvest, then you don't need to. Then you would need to do two plowings. Or then you need to do two separate plowings to get rid of the weeds, plus one right before you plant. As opposed to if it had previously been plowed to get rid of the weeds, then fine, you don't need to do that again.
Well, it was plowed the first time, the first year.
Yeah, but that's what we're saying. After the previous harvest in this field, what did you do with this field then? Did you then go right away and then plow it to get rid of any weeds that may be remaining? So then now, the following year, you don't necessarily need to. So now, you do need to do. So now, at the beginning of the next year, you would need to do one plowing to get rid of the weeds, but you're not going to do, you need to do yet another one before you plow again. So maybe the Braisa and the Mishnah are not contradicting one another, and therefore maybe you can learn one from the other. So the Gemara says, my havi halacha. Well, okay, what's the bottom line? What's the halacha then? Do we have to plow it? Do we have to plow it yet again or not? Regular Rashi over here in Rabbeinu Gershom explained the question is a little bit different. If we're saying that the Mishnah is talking about that you already plowed the field beforehand, even before the first year, the fact is the Mishnah had not said Chodesh V'Shoneh. What would be the halacha? Do you in fact have to plow it two times to get rid of the weeds or not? So the Gemara says Toshma, and we can prove from another Braisa, the Tanya, Nur Chetia. What you do is you plow half the field, the Zereh Chetia, and you plant the other half. And then you switch back and forth. Nur Chetia v'Zereh Chetia, and then the next year you plow one half of it and leave the whole thing. Chetia, and you leave half of it just plowed, not planted. V'Zereh Chetia, and you plant only one half of it. And then the next year, Nur Chetia v'Zereh Chetia, you plow the whole thing, leave half of it empty, and leave the other half of it you can plant. And that way each year you're planting only half the field. The part that you didn't plant will have a chance to rest, right? So now though the Braisa is still saying that you only plow one time the previous year, because it doesn't say nor chetzi v'zereh chetzi, implying that you don't need the twice nor before you're going to plant over there. So that would be the answer then, that you don't need to do that. You plant to get you plow. So it was a machlokes between two Braisas. So now we can say that last Braisa agrees with the Mishnah, since the Mishnah didn't say anything about Shoina. So the answer would be, according to the Mishnah, and that would be the halacha, you don't have to plow twice to get rid of the weeds. It's enough, even if it wasn't avuda before, it's enough to plow it once, and then you're going to plow right before you plant over there as you usually do. Continuing with the topic of types of fields from which you can bring grain for the menachos, Amar Rav Yochanan, particularly the Omer, Amar Rav Yochanan, Ein Mevi'en Es HaOmer, Elam Asodes Amudramos. You bring the Omer only from fields that Amudramos, Sheba Eretz Yisrael, from the fields that are south in Eretz Yisrael. Again, like we said on Amar Aleph, that can mean that they're in the south of the country, or it can mean that they're facing, that they're on south facing slopes, and they can be in other places in the country. So there is the fact also they have to be close to Eretz Yisrael, because they have to be close to the line, because we said in particular the Omer has to be as fresh as possible, but within that it also has to be. And the Gemara says Tanya Nami Hachi, we learn similarly in a Braisa. Abba Shol Omer Hoya Ba Mibikas Beis Mikla, the Omer they would usually bring from the valley of Beis Mikla. Which actually the Tosefta, when it brings it, mentions that it's a place in Nachal Kidron, in which case it's very close to Yerushalayim. Nachal Kidron is the deep valley east of Yerushalayim, between Yerushalayim and Har HaZeisim. So Beis Mikla then would be right in the outskirts of Yerushalayim. There was a field where you could grow about three, where you could grow about three saw of Tevorah. Because as we learned back in Parak Rabbi Shmuel, you're supposed to harvest three saw of barley in order to bring the Omer. So like this, it was a place where they could kind of grow three saw of barley. The southern Madremes Hoysa, it was indeed a southern field, so either south, either in the south of Eretz Yisrael, which is the area around Yerushalayim, or it was south, a south facing slope. The sun would rise and set on that field, so it's exposed to the sun. And as we said before, no chetzia, so the owner would plow the whole, he would plow the whole thing, chetzia, and leave half of it plowed, v'zereya chetzia, and plant only the second half, and then the next year, no chetzia, v'zereya chetzia, the next year he'd plow the whole thing to get rid of the weeds and plant only the one half. So we see what Rabbi Yochanan is saying, that they would in fact bring the Omer Dabka from such fields that are mudromos. Now, we learned in an earlier parak that when they couldn't, when all the fields around Yerushalayim were destroyed by the civil war between the Hyrcanus and Aristobulus that we learned about over there, so then they had to bring the Omer from further away. We have the whole story over there with where they had to bring from Gagas Srithin, which I was mentioning at the time that some of the, there was a place, there was a Jewish town called Srithin. Later on, it was an Arab village called Sarafen. Nowadays, it's where Kfar Chabad is. Maybe that's Gagas Srithin. Maybe that's where they brought the Omer from, that Yerid area of what's now Kfar Chabad. Anyway, okay. So the Gemara tells in this connection that you can see what good quality grain you can get by following this all of this that we're saying in the Braises. Rav Chilki of Artubi have a account of the Ara. Rav Chilki of Artubi had a corner of land, so it wasn't even a large piece of land. It was just like a corner next to another field. So he did exactly that. Nor chetzia v'zorah chetzia. He plowed the whole thing, planted only half of it. Nor chetzia v'zorah chetzia. And then he plowed another half, the other half. He plowed the whole thing the following year and planted only half of it. V'obdal chad trei, and it produced twice as much. It produced twice as much grain as you would have expected to get from that. And he was able to sell that wheat for people to make smida, which is solus, which is the same quality of solus that we said for the menachas, that it was such good quality because he followed this advice, and therefore see, he was able. Now it wasn't for menachas, Sebastian points out, Rav Chilki bar Tobi lived long after the Churban. So it couldn't have been from Menachos. He was doing it this way, though. No, in other words, he had really, really high quality grain that he was able to sell to rich people and make extra money from it. Sfas Emes points out, I mean, on the face of it, though, what is he gaining exactly? If he had planted the whole field, he would have gotten a regular amount of grain. He planted half the field. Fine, he got twice as much grain from that half, but that's equal to what he would have gotten from the whole thing if he had planted the whole thing. So what is he gaining? So he says, right, so he gives a couple of answers. First of all, this way he gains, he didn't have to, yeah, workers, but also the seeds itself. He didn't have to give, he didn't have to spend half the seeds for the other half. Also, that it was such good quality that he was able to get solace out of it. And then he says also that it is true that people usually leave their field unplowed and unplanted for a while in order that it should regain its strength. Here, what it is that here he's doing it. He's doing it better every year. He's able to plant something without weakening the ground too much. The Mishnah had said v'imi tliya psula. The Mishnah had said that if the flower developed worms, then it's possible. So Tana Rabbanan, solus sheitliya ruva psula. If the flower
If most of the flower
became wormy, then it's possible. And the chitin sheet liu rubon. And similarly, if most of the wheat got worms in it, also psulis. So in other words, if there's only a small amount of it that has worms, then it means that maybe the advaz explains, then fine, you can throw out that part. But here, where it's most of it became wormy, then we would say rubon to kule, and the whole thing is possible. So the law says, "Boy Rab Yirmiyah." When we say chitin sheit liu rubon, what do we mean? Beroiv chita, do we mean most of each grain of wheat was infested by worms? Oy beroiv saw, or do we mean most of the saw? If we measure out the saw of grain and we find that most of them have been attacked by worms, so in other words, so what do we say? If you have most of the wheat has most of the grains have been attacked, many of the grains have been attacked, most of the grain has been eaten by worms, but you have some grains that are left that have been untouched, then those would be kosher. Or would we say most of the saw, and then even when you have some intact grains, then those would also be possible. So unless it's taken, we can't be sure about that. Boy Rava, so now Rava asks another question. Hikdishan, Maush Yukale and Mishram Balmum. If a person is Makdish, such roomy wheat or roomy flour, is he getting Malkus as he would if he was Makdish or Balmum? There's an issue in the Torah to be Makdish or Balmum. Besides that you can't be Makdish or Balmum, there's also a loisa saying the Torah to be Makdish here. So here is this the equivalent of a Balmum. So we say Kivin the Possel is there, Kivin the Possel Kabalmum, I mean, since it's possible to bring on a Mizbeach, then it should be considered like a Balmum. Ojuma, ain't Balmum, Elab Behema. Maybe the concept of Balmum applies only to a Behema.
Take.
So it was a Teku also. We don't know the answer to that. The Gemara continues. Tanan Hossam, here's another question in this connection. We learn in the Mishnah in Vidis, Kol Eitz Shenimsa Bo Telas, any wood that you find worms in it, possible to gather Mizbeach is possible to bring on the Mizbeach. We know in Masechta Tainus, the Gemara, and in Bava Basra, the Gemara tells us one of the reasons why they celebrated on Chamisha Asaba'av, why it's a Yom Tov, is because they finished cutting wood for the Ma'arocha, because after that, the sun's power starts weakening. Here we said Shvat, it starts strengthening all the time. It starts weakening, so now the wood is going to be moister, and it may have worms in it. So therefore, so they stopped cutting wood for the Ma'arocha, because then it's more likely to be infested with worms.
Oh, so that's when they checked it.
No, so there's a Shvat the year they would check it, but the Mishnah says, any wood that has worms in it, it's possible for them as they are. And in fact, that was the Mishnah tells us in Shkolim that was the job of the Kohen and Balei Mumim. They would go and they would stand in Lishkas Eitzim and they would be in one of the four chambers in the Ezus Noshim and they would go check the wood all the time to see whether it had wood in it. Amar Shmuel, Lo Shano Ela Lach. Now that would apply, says Shmuel, only if the wood is moist. So then you can't just take out the womb, the woomy area. You have to throw out that whole piece of wood. First of all, Rashi Ksavya gives two reasons. Number one, if it's moist and emo takana, there's no way of fixing it up. I guess because like the womb stuff penetrates more deeply into the wood or something. But Rashi says a second reason is because practically speaking, you can't carve it out, in other words, the point is, like this, you could, on the face of it, you should be able to scrape it off, but if the wood is moist, you're not going to be able to do that. You can't scrape off something moist. So therefore, it'll be possible. Aval Yavish, but Shmuel says, if the wood is dry, goyrei, the kosher, then you can scrape off the part that was infested by worms, and it'll be kosher. So now you have a similar question. Boy Rav, Hikdishoi, what if a person has makdish wood for the Mizbeach that has worms in it? Would he get Malkus for being Makdish a Balmum? Same question. Given the Possel to Balmum, Rabbi, since it's Possel and it's considered like a Balmum, or do I Balmum, Elab Behemo, maybe again, the concept of Balmum applies only to an animal. And again, the answer is Teiku. Tosfos points out that why does the Gemara have to bring so many different questions that all amount to the same thing? Udiyu in the Masechta, we talked about that wood itself can be brought as a korban by itself, so therefore so the question specifically about wood would be according to Rebbe, that Eitzim, that wood is considered a full-fledged korban of its own. And in fact, the Minchas Chinuch says that Davka, the question is, when a person is menadim, Eitzim, wood by itself, as a korban, when it comes to if a person is just taking wood from the Ma'arocha, and it happens to have worms in it, surely, says the Minchas Chinuch, he's not going to get Malkus for that, because that wouldn't be considered a korban. Next, the mission continues. Now that we talked about where they get the flour for where they get the wheat or barley for the various menachos, now let's talk about the other components of the korbanos. Tekoya al Kolashem, the city of Tekoya in Eretz Yisrael, which is a city in the territory of Shevet Yehuda. Al Kolashem is alpha, also like the Greek word alpha, meaning the best quality as far as oil. In fact, there's an explanation when we say that they have to light, why they have to light Neres Chanukah, why they have to light from that Pach Shemen Echad for 8 days. So one famous explanation is that this place was a 4 days journey from Yerushalayim. So they had to go there for 4 days and press the oil and return 4 days, and therefore the oil had to last them for 8 days. The other famous explanation is it only took 1 day, but they had to first become Torah from Tumas Nes. They had fought the Greeks, they killed lots of Greeks, so therefore they needed 7 days to become Torah from Tumas Nes, and then 1 day to press the oil.
Usher
was blessed with oil. We're going to talk about that later, yeah. But right now we're talking about a city of Tekoya. It seems there was in fact a city of Tekoya in Usher's territory as well, but So over here it seems Mephoshim explained that it means the one in Yehuda. Abba Shola, and Abba Shola says Shniela, the second best quality Regev the Evra Yavdin is the city of Regev located in Evra Yavdin. So now, an interesting point is that in the previous Mishnah, when we had the first and second quality ones, we didn't have anybody disagreeing. It was a Stam Mishnah. Here, all of a sudden, you have Abba Shol saying, implying that Tanakama wouldn't agree with him. And why does he have to stress that it's the Evra Yaudin? So then there's a Sicha in Chelech of Gal, the Rebbe Shtelzach on it. On this, first of all, he brings from Rav Levi Yitzchak, his father, that Regev over here is the same as Argoiv. We find in Parshas Devarim, Chevel Argoiv, a district in Evra Yarden called Argoiv. So here it's called Regev. There's actually a footnote in the Yochanan Boreas Mishnayos that says the same thing as well. So Levi develops a whole idea of Pikabola based on that and based on other mentions of Abba Shol in connection with oil. So then Rav has a Sicha explaining basically that the Tanakhama would say you definitely have to bring oil from Eretz Yisrael proper. You can't bring from Evra Yarden. Whereas Abba Shol is saying, no, you can bring from Evra Yarden. And the Rebbe develops the point in the Sicha that oil represents bittul. So now the Tanakhama is saying real bittul you can only have in Eretz Yisrael. Abba Shol is saying, no, even though Evra Yarden, it was brought about, how does Evra Yarden come to be a place of Jewish settlement? Is because Shevet Reuben and God, Chatzi Shevet Menashe, demanded it. And so it's the Rus of Ilustata. Nevertheless, Abba Shol says even that kind of thing. You have a Matzias of your own, you're still able to be poil bittul from that, and therefore you can bring the oil from there. And then it goes on to connect it with another mention, Reb Levick mentions in his essay over there that there's a place in the Sefer Nidus where it describes one of the chambers in the Bis Mikdash where Reb Elazar and Yaakov says, I forgot what that was used for, and Abba Shol says they stored wine and oil over there. So wine and oil both represent aspects of Torah. Wine represents the chayus that a person puts into Torah. Oil represents the bittul, and Abba Shol is saying that you can do both of them. You can have the chayus and you can have the bittul at the same time, just like he's saying over here that you can have Evra Yarden can also be a place from which you can get the power of Bittul. So the Mishnah continues, Kol Ha'arot HaSayuk Sheiras. Now the fact is, all other lands are kosher to bring oil from. Elamikan, how you move in, but these are the places from where they would get the oil because that's the best quality. The Mishnah continues, like in the previous Mishnah, Ein Mavim Le Mavesa Zvolim, you can't bring oil from places that were fertilized with fertilizer or in garbage heaps or whatever, because again, for the reasons that we talked about on Amud Aleph, Le Mavesa Shochin, or from a dry field that has to be irrigated, because then again, the olives won't be the best quality. Or from an olive grove where you have plants, where you have grain or vegetables growing between them, because there you have the opposite problem, like we said before, when you take grain from a field where trees grow, where the trees take nourishment from the ground, here you have the opposite problem, the vegetables or the grain are going to take nourishment that should go to the olives. By the way, there's no problem of kilayim with it, because kilayim is only when you have two different grapes together with vegetables or grain, or when you have two different types of grain or two different types of vegetables or whatever together. But trees and grain, there's no problem. Nevertheless, the im havi, but if he did bring from these places kosher, then it's kosher b'dieven. The Mishnah continues, Ein Mavien Mashinizrabinam. I said, not where you have plants growing between them. Vim Havi Kafir, but if he did bring from them, then it's kosher. The Mishnah continues, Ein Mavien Anpakton. You cannot bring Anpakton, which we're going to learn tomorrow in the Gemara, Bez Hashem. It says the word is actually Anpakinun. It means oil from unripe olives. Vim Havi Kafir, but if he did bring that, then Bidiyevit is kosher. Rashi Ksaviyad actually has the gears of the Imhevi Posel, that it would actually be Posel. We have other places in Shas also where it mentions this, and Rashi also mentions the point over there that it would be Posel. Then the Mishnah continues, Ein Mavien Min HaGargurin Shenishru B'mayim. You can't bring oil from olives that were soaked in water and then pressed, because then the oil ruins the water ruins the oil. V'lo Min HaKvashim, or from olives that were pickled. V'lo Min HaShlokim, or from olives that were cooked. Vim Havi Apostle, and if he does bring from any of them, then the Apostle, because it's not an all good quality. It has to at least be fine. It can be from olives that didn't grow in such good condition, but at least the olives themselves have to be pressed under the right conditions. Yeah. Okay. Now we said in the Mishnah that the best place to get oil was a place called Tekoya. So the Gemara brings in this connection, and by the way, in that Sicha that ever points out, the word Tekoya is related to the word Toka, like to fasten yourself, so it really refers to a place where a person can fasten himself to the Eibishter in a way of Bittul. So therefore, that's the best place for oil. Now, the Pasuk describes as follows. After you have a whole story in Sefer, and you have a whole story in Sefer Shmuel, where Avshalom killed his older brother Amnon, in turn because of what Amnon did to Tamar, and then Avshalom ran away. So now Avshalom is away from home for years, and David really misses him, but he doesn't want to go and openly tell him to come back because he's angry at him for killing his brother. So Yoav decides he has to get a way to convince David the right thing to do is to bring back Avshalom. So he brings in a woman, a very wise woman, and he has her do a whole play act in front of David. Also about two sons of hers where one killed the other, and now they want to kill the murderer, and then I'm going to have no sons left. And David finally tells her, so they go back and forth, and David tells her, don't worry, nobody's going to harm your son. And then she tells him, you should realize this whole thing was a mushel about your two sons. Yes, your one son, Amnon, is dead. There's no bringing him back alive again. At least don't lose your other son, Avshalom, as well. Bring him back. So the pasuk starts off by Yishlach Yoav Tekoya. So Yoav sent to the city of Tekoya, Vayikach Misham Yishlach HaChama, and he brought from there a wise woman. So the Gemara says, Maishna Tekoya, why at this did he bring Davka from the city of Tekoya? So the answer is, Amar Rav Yochanan, Mitokshir, Gilim B'Shem and Zayis, because they regularly have olive oil over there, because we're saying it's a place where they have the best olive oil, Chokma Matsuya Behem, therefore Chokma is more prevalent among people over there. So therefore, so he knew that if he's going to find a wise woman, he has his best chance of finding her in Tekoya. And she had to be, because she had to do the whole, she had to put on a very convincing act to David and manipulate the conversation.
Who sent her David?
Yoav, okay. David's general. Yoav knew everything that happened, of course, and he didn't want that. Avshalom should be lost, and so he's saying. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braise. So here's another place in Eretz Yisrael, like you said, Shevet Osher, that has a tremendous bracha of oil. The pasuk says, "V'tovu b'shemen raglo." He dips his foot in oil. Zeh chelke shel osher. This refers to the portion of osher. And one point is, Marashah explains, in other words, because the reason why now on the face of it, what do we need to say? It's part of the bracha of osher. Of course, it refers to shevet osher. So one point is because the next pasuk after that, Barzel and Choshes min alacha, this is all in v'zeis bracha. Rashi explains on the pasuk over there that's referring to the whole Jewish people. So maybe the tovu b'shemen raglo is also referring to the whole Jewish people and not specifically to osher. So no, we're saying it refers specifically to osher. Shemosha shemen kamayan. They have so much oil over there that it flows like a stream. Omru, so they said, Pamachas Nitzruchulahan Ansh Ludkiya B'Shemen. One time the people of Ludki, a city in what's nowadays Turkey or Syria or someplace like that, needed a lot of oil. Minulahan Pulmustus Echad, so they appointed an official to be in charge of the matter. Omru, and they told him, Leich Bahavilan Hashemen B'Meir Riboy. Go bring us oil for 10,000 dinarims, so 1,000,000 dinarim. 1,000,000 dinarims worth of oil. And dinarim, by the way, usually means gold dinarim, so we're talking about an enormous amount of money. Rashi says over here was Meir Ribe Mona Dinarim. So it's a million mona. Mona itself is a hundred silver dinar. So you're talking 100 million silver dinar. Holach Yerushalayim. So he went first to Yerushalayim. And they told him we don't have so much. Now, why is he going to Yerushalayim in the first place? An interesting point that a number of Mefoshim make is the Gemara. But why Dr. Yerushalayim? What makes him think he's going to find so much oil in Yerushalayim? Is one interesting point that a couple of Mefoshim bring up. The Gemara tells him in Baba Basra, you're not allowed to export from Eretz Yisrael certain kinds of things that are staples that people use all the time, including oil. So therefore, he first needs to go ask permission from the Sanhedrin. I need this enormous amount of oil exported from Eretz Yisrael. Can you give me a special waiver for it? So therefore, he first went there. So the pashtus, then he got his waiver. On Ruloy, they told him, Lech Litzur, go to the city of Tzur. Now, Tosfos points out, there is a city of Tzur, the famous city of Tzur, on the coast of Eretz Yisrael, nowadays in Lebanon, which in those times was a big trading center. However, Tosfos says, this is not the one we're talking about. We're talking about a city elsewhere in Eretz Yisrael named Tzur. So Mefarshim will explain the reason why it can't be the one on the coast is because geographically, Ludkiya is north of Eretz Yisrael, in Syria or Turkey. If he was passing through on his way down to Eretz Yisrael, why didn't he stop in Syria first and see if they have oil? And why would he be going there now?
Need permission from Yerushalayim first.
No, fine. He might have needed permission from Yerushalayim, but once they tell him in Yerushalayim, go to Tzur, if he had already passed through Tzur and found they don't have enough oil, he would have no reason to go back there. So therefore, it must mean a city in Eretz Yisrael. Omer Lois, they told him specifically, Lech Gush Cholov, go to the city of Gush Cholov in the territory of Osher, and you'll find the oil. He goes to Gush Cholov. Omer Lois, they told him, Lech it's a Pliny, the Sada Allah, go to Pliny in such a field. So he goes, Umotze Shaya Oizik Tachas Zesam. He goes and finds this owner was Oizik under his, under his olive trees. What is Oizik? So Rashi Ksaviyat explains he's digging trenches under his olive trees so they'll get more water. Tosfos brings another explanation that can mean that it means that he was building stone fences around his olive trees. But Tosfos says it doesn't really work because Tachas Zesav suggests under his trees. You don't build the fence under the tree; you build it around it. So Tosfos brings from the Aruch that it means that he was taking out stones from the field. He's digging, not just digging like Rashi and Rashi Ksaviyat say, but digging to remove stones. Now this is the kind of thing a poor person might do. A rich person would delegate it to other people. Omaloi. So the messenger says to the Yid, Yesh lecha shemen b'meya b'vivoy. Do you have this enormous amount of oil, of 100 million dinars worth of oil, shani tzarech, that I need? Omaloi. So the Yid tells him, yeah, but hamtin liyachasai malachti, wait till I finish my work. Himtin liyachasai malachti, wait until the guy finishes his work. After the guy finishes his work, hifshul kelav achor, he slung his tools behind his back, like people usually do when they're finished work. And in particular, Rashi makes a point, like a poor worker does, like he would just sling it behind his back to keep his clothes as clean as possible. And as he's walking along, he'll notice a stone here, a stone there, and take it out of the field. So the messenger again asks, Yesh lecha shemen b'meya b'vivoy, do you really have that enormous amount of oil? And he thinks to himself, Kimdumani, or he says to the guy, Kimdumani, looks like the Jews have played a practical joke on me. They're sending me to this poor guy, and he's going to have this enormous amount of oil. Kivinshi gil iroi. When the Yid reaches the city, his maidservant brought out to him a kettle full of hot water. And he washed his hands and feet with it, so that way he feels more refreshed. Then she brought out a golden bowl full of oil, and he dipped his hands and feet in it. This fulfills what it says in the Bracha for Asher. He dips his foot in oil. So now the Shliach starts realizing to himself, you know what, this guy's not a poor guy. If he can afford a gold bowl, then yeah. After they ate together and drank together, then sure enough, the Yid measured him out the 100 million dinar worth of oil. Omaloi, when he finished, he asked him, Klumat Tzarek Liyosa, do you need more? Omaloi Hain, so the Shliach says, yeah, actually we could use more. Elisha Ain Lidamen, but I'm out of money. Omaloi, so the Yid tells him, so fine, if you want to buy more, then buy on credit. Vani Elachimach, and I'll go along with you to your city, the Etel Damav, and I'll collect the money over there. Mordadlo Shemin, Bishmoina Osiriboy. And he measured out for him another 180,000 times 100, another 1.8 million dinar worth of oil. So they said, now how's he going to transport all that oil back to Lodkia? That guy, this guy, did not leave a single horse or mule or camel or donkey in Eretz Yisrael that he didn't hire to bring back all that oil. Kivinshi deal the era, he comes back to his city, Yotza Anshira, the Kalsa, all the people of Lodkia came out to praise him. You did such a great job. Omalahem, he tells him, Loidli Kalsuni, don't praise me, Elo Zesha Ba'imi, praise this guy who came with me. Shemadadli Shemin Meiriboy, he measured out for me 100 million dinar worth of oil, Vahare Vahareu Noshabi, Bishmona Asriboy, and I still owe him another 1.8 million. So it's all to his credit. And in fact, also he's also crediting him. In fact, not just crediting him for his riches, but look at that he has this midah that he acts like a poor person. He doesn't lord it over other people. He goes and does his work himself. But yet, look how rich he is compared to me. Look how much I owe him. So compared to him, look how poor I am. In other words. Mepharshim also point out an interesting point as well that we see also that the Yid, we said they ate and drank together and only then he measured out. Like here, he's going to make his fortune now. They're going to be paying him 100 million dinar. So he's going to be set for life. He could retire now at this point, and yet he's not in such a hurry. He's not in such a rush. First, let's eat and drink. First, let's relax. And I'm not so new halachoy, and I'm not so eager for the money. Yeah. So v'kayim mashenema. This whole story fulfills what it says. Fulfills and shows in real life what it says in the pasuk. Yesh misasher ve'ein kol. You can have a person who's rich, but he really doesn't have anything. Who pretends that he's rich, but he really doesn't have anything. Misroishish. You can have a person who pretends to be poor, v'hoin rov, and really he has a huge fortune. So here, this guy is doing his own work in his field, in his orchard, and yet he's so tremendously rich. The Ion Yaakov points out there's also a remez in it. Oil, we said before, represents chokhmah. Sometimes you have a person who prides himself and makes himself look like he's full of chokhmah, and he really doesn't have anything. Versus misroishish, you have a person who pretends that he's not such a great chokham, and really v'hoin rov, and he has a tremendous wealth of Torah in him.
Awesome.